Next to me is Diana Pilar Gonzalez, and I'm Johanna Schwab. I'm doing a project in New York City, which is called Refashion New York City, and I interview people who do inspiring fashion approaches, and I think Diana is one of them. So I'm happy you made it here to Flux Factory. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Johanna. I'm so excited to be here at the Flux Factory.
My name is Johanna. I will be living in New York City for the next 6 months. As a lover of fashion and its invisible power, of words, voices, and questioning, I do what I like the most. Talk to people whose work and thoughts I find inspiring. This podcast is called Refashion New York City. Before I'm gonna say more about Diana Pilar Gonzalez, I want to introduce the Flux Factory we've been mentioning before. The Flux Factory is an artist residency space in Queens, New York. It offers affordable studios to artists from across the globe. I was lucky to rent one too. Besides that, Flux has a lot of public programming going on and is deeply engaged in making artist networks sustainable. Working there means meeting amazing people, and it was one of the best experiences I ever had. A time always rotating between funny, yummy, moving, and inspiring. Coming back to Diana. It felt unreal. Years ago, I contacted her because I read about her work and loved it, and we Skyped. Back then, we didn't know that we would meet in person someday. Why I tell that? Because these days, I myself need to come to terms with the fact that life is unpredictable, and also, some good things just need a while. Diana has invented a project which is called Hacking Couture. In this project, she brings together fashion and technology after she learned some profound things while studying computer programming. For example, that programmers share their codes to educate other programmers, even to let them build up on their inventions. Diana, who is also a fashion lover, missed exactly these ethics in the fashion sphere and therefore created Hacking Couture. Hacking Couture is made to open closed design systems to everyone. Or to put it more simply, Hacking Couture gives you the tools you need to create your own, let's say, do-it-yourself Chanel-alike jacket. Sure, there's much more to it, and therefore I let Diana do the talking now. First, as always in my fashion talks, the wordplay. I told you I'm gonna start with a wordplay.
Mm-hmm.
I just say a word and you say a sentence or a word, whatever comes into your mind.
Okay.
The first word is wardrobe.
Gone.
Confidence.
Vulnerability.
Basic.
Complex.
Style.
Destruction.
So fast. DIY.
Formal.
Must have.
Nothing.
Passion.
Money. I don't know why.
Detail.
Oriented.
Patchwork.
Patchwork. Patience.
Mainstream.
I have to say about patchwork, it reminds me of my Aunt Melba in Panama. She did patchwork. What was the other one?
The last one already. It's mainstream.
Fun.
Thank you. You. Okay, yeah, like speaking of Panama, you're born in Panama City.
Yes.
And then someday, like when you're grown up already, you moved to Washington, D.C. Now you're in New York since 15 years we had before
yes.
in the talk. I wondered, is there a crucial fashion-related story you want to share, you experienced somewhere you've been so far?
You mean in general?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the most important fashion story for me is going with my mother, Eda, who is an amazing maker. And for me, she's my style icon. Going to her seamstress, Elena, and I was very little and we'll spend hours there. And I just remember just like reading the magazines and just being there and my mother getting her ideas like done for her. And I think that was really life-changing. And there was this whole culture around the, all these women being there and like going there and yeah.
So what did your mom get made there? Like special dresses or for everyday life?
All of it. And I think Elena, maybe they were good friends also, and maybe also confidant. And I think there was this whole relationship, and she made normal, like regular, everyday, and very special dresses. Yeah. And this was a relationship for until Elena died mm-hmm. in the 90s. Yeah.
Did you have a dress of Elena too? Or?
Of course. Yeah. And also Mrs. La Señora Luisa, which she actually helped me. It was so funny because she's been making my costumes since I'm 5 or younger. And I recently performed at the Panama Fashion Week, and she helped with the costume. Mm. I brought some stuff, I made some stuff, and she helped put it together. So those two relationships are really, really important. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. How did your love for fashion start? Is that with Elena, or do you have another story maybe?
Yeah, well, I would say I think the love for fashion started with my mother. Really like seeing how we would go and spend hours with the seamstress. There's a place in Panama, a store that it was called Telas Twiggy, and it was named after Twiggy, the supermodel. And then we'll just go there for hours, at least once a week, and looking at all these rooms full of creativity and also reading fashion magazines. I think that has a lot to do in why I love fashion. And now looking back, it was not about becoming the image in the magazine, but really empowering her everyday life and having all this retrain, all this community, creative community around fashion, right? So I think those were turning moments that all through my mom.
That's amazing. So like, because that's not a very common story that you very early also realized that fashion can be community based or something, if I got that right.
Yeah, well, I think like now looking back, I can say that, but I think that there's also a dark side to it, which is when I became a teenager growing up, then body image became a thing that I didn't look like the women in the magazine, that I was not, you know, that I didn't have the body of someone really thin, or that I didn't look certain way, or I didn't look Scandinavian like most models are, right? So I think that was also another part of the story of this loneliness of not being accepted, because I think fashion, it could have both sides of the coin. And I think today we're talking about fashion, and it's about this connection and this beauty of building that community. So yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So maybe we can like, make a cut here and then now come to Hacking Couture and
yes.
the way you engage in fashion.
Yes.
Maybe you can tell first for the people, because I'm bringing that to a yeah. part of Europe. I don't know if you've been there before. I know you've been to Italy for sure. But yeah. Maybe you can tell us, what is Hacking Couture?
So Hacking Couture is an experiment. It's a fashion experiment that started in 2006. And the whole idea was to engage with fashion and develop these experiential situations in which I could engage with fashion within my own set of values. I know that really sounds really academic. I heard yesterday someone was like, you sound so academic. And English is my second language, so I'm like, I don't mean to sound academic, but maybe the project was born in academic context when I was at Tisch at NYU. And when I was at Tisch, I was learning programming, to do circuitry and computers, but also with art. And I think that really influenced the project. So in Hacking Couture, in a nutshell, I reverse engineer brands, right? That's part of the developing a formal approach to branding. And then from there, I create a persona based on whatever I reverse engineer, let's say Chanel, right? Or let's say Gucci. And once I develop this character, that I create also the costumes with whatever is around me, then I facilitate workshops in which I engage audiences that want to learn how to make something or that want to learn how to be engaged with fashion or that know about fashion but want to learn about an engaged culture. And then within these workshops, people learn, people use recycled materials, and they create their own versions of the brands. And so, yeah, so that was a long-winded answer, but that's what the project is about. It's like how I could develop these experiments into how we can learn about fashion, celebrate fashion, but to do it in a way that is positive, that is community, and that also has a curation.
And maybe it doesn't have to do with money, you know, like money being the entrance into brands like Chanel or stuff.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you talk about money, because money is a currency, but how can we develop new ways? And I'm not exclusive of making it not money or not monetizable, but in a way that is not just about consuming, going to buy, because the industry really does create a lot of waste. So how can we create new ways of consuming fashion? So
thank you for saying that, because yeah, maybe consuming is the more precise term.
Yeah.
Because there is a possibility to get like runaway outfits at Zara or stuff. So there's this two ranges, this very luxury and luxury on the one side, fast fashion on the other side, but you have this an approach to fashion which is not about consume.
Well, to quote a friend of mine, John Halpern, it's a new consume. And I will fall under that umbrella into how can we create new ways of consumption that have mindfulness, that have a new paradigm. So it's not just about I go by or I feel bad about myself because I don't have the latest trend, or I feel guilty because I support fast fashion because I want to be trendy, right? So it's like, how can we create a new paradigm? And I think many artists and also designers are starting to work in that arena, and also how to make it organic and sustainable. So it is a broad thing, but I think having different artists engage in this conversation, you as well, that you are doing this sort of projects where recycle fashion and bringing art into it and making wearable art. Other fellows, other friends like Charlotte Gaspard has been doing that with her line C-Spot and Wardrobe Breakdown, another friend. And anyways, I can go on, and there are many people working on that space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to come to that a bit later again.
Yeah.
Because I have my notes here.
Yes.
So on your website, you share how like Hacking Couture works and other works you do through lists. Lists which talk about the methods, like how to do something, one, two, three, or also the values and the goals. And I want to talk about a value and a goal I found very interesting, or two goals. Like one value I found very interesting is design literacy. Because I talk to some fashion designers here in New York who come from fashion school, and they don't want to be called designers anymore. They have a problem with that term.
So how do they want to be called?
One said like more like a guide, someone who's a guide, or they want to be more artists or stuff, or maybe clothes makers or something. That fashion designers like just a brief.
It sounds like a spiritual guide.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a truth to it, or I wondered, what is a designer for you, and what do you want to teach about design? Because I think design literacy, it's such an interesting thing, and what is it?
Okay, so why am I called a designer, if I hear you correctly, and if I like being called a designer? Well, I was trained as a designer. Originally, I come from architecture, and yeah, I'm called a designer because I'm trained as a designer. I think design is a service profession. But also, I delved into art because I wanted to address problems that I was seeing and that were subjective to me. So although I work in art, I design methodology sometimes, but I also break it. And I think this is why it's a hybrid of non-conventional approaches to art and design. So that was the first question, right? And the second one is, why design literacy?
Yeah.
So I'm from Panama, and it's important for me with this love that I have for design, for fashion, because I think it gives a different perspective to the world and how we address, for example, traffic. In Europe and in other parts of the world, design is embedded in the culture. I think we all have different ways of designing, but to be aware of it and to celebrate it, I think it could help us have better government. It could allow us to have better communication. So I've been working as a commercial experience designer for over a decade here in New York, and the collaborative aspect of design, I think, is something that we can borrow. And my love for fashion is not about the ways that it can create or you know, all those bad things about the industry. It's about the beauty, the art, all those wonderful things. And I think we have to celebrate the good things. And I think in Hacking Couture, as much as it is a critique, it is also a celebration of fashion. So it's just one vertical that we can learn from, in that I want to communicate that beauty. That's why it's one of the values, because design has been such an important part of my life that I think has changed how I see the world for the better. So I think perhaps sharing that with others is important.
Thank you. There's two more things I wanted, because I went through your goals too with Hacking Couture, and there's two things I loved too, and I wanted to know more about it. Mm-hmm. You say, like, one goal is to acknowledge the big, the small, and the unknown. So what does that mean?
So I think that means acknowledging all the creativity that could happen. So you have big brands, Prada, Chanel, but you also have people, everyday people, that just love putting themselves together. Or you have the DIYer, or you have the crafter. So it doesn't matter how big you are. I think it's more of a democratization that everybody voices matter. And everybody wears clothes. I mean, we're not in a society that people are naked. So I think that we have a conversation through our self-expression.
And also, like, one goal is that hacking traditional fashion forecasting. So when I participate, what do I learn?
So this is like the designer part of me. The way that fashion is produced is that there is a trend research, right? So trend researchers will go around the globe, document what we now call influencers, because I think a lot of trend research is being developed through Instagram. But you will go and go to cool places and take photographs of these people, or the designer, the creative director, will have a hunch into what was the pulse of culture and go and document that. So that's what dictated what we wore. And now, when Hacking Couture, I wanted to alter how those ideas were generated and elevate. So instead of documenting somebody, what if you ask them or allow them to create a prototype of a concept of their idea? So then we are having a conversation through design instead of telling people based on a dictatorship. It's like, oh, this is what I like. And I do believe that we do need some sort of curation, because when I do Hacking Couture and people create things and I photograph them or I present it, I have my personal curation around that, but I tried to celebrate everybody's design at the same time. So in a way, it was altering, giving an alternative to traditional fashion forecasting. And this is something that I do in my work when I'm working as an experience designer, is like, how can we allow everybody in the team to express their idea, even if they're not good sketchers, or if they're not quote unquote perfect with Adobe Suite, right? So it's to allow other voices to express, although they might not have the skill. And that's what I mean by hacking the forecasting, to give power to other people to be part of the conversation and share their ideas.
Thank you. So, next page.
Yes.
There's some technological terms you use from, let's say, the early days of internet and computing, mm-hmm. which are open source, hacking, and peer-to-peer. And we were also talking about like the mix of analog and digital your project is. Mm-hmm. And you started something related. So how did this context come into fashion, or how did it come together?
Yeah, I think the place that it all collided was being at TISH at the ITP program at NYU, which stands for Interactive Telecommunications Program. And I was learning how to develop programming, and I had no idea how to program. I mean, I'm a trained designer, but I was really surprised that people were sharing their code as a way for allowing other people to learn how to code, or to take an example, tweak it a little bit, and then you could do something. So through the act of copying and sharing, literally, computer code, you could advance and you wouldn't be that intimidated. So also the culture of open source in the technology world allows for that. So and there are different models of licensing code, or other people can be egalitarian, that they will allow you to use the code if it's for something that is good in the world. So I think technology is actually a lot more open versus fashion, because fashion is complete paradigm. And I feel it's also a personal approach, because I usually combine things that are very far apart in my creative process. So I think seeing this juxtaposition of something so open and something so closed was like, what if fashion could be open like that? What if we could hack brands? What if they would be open? What would people's creativity and interpretation of that could be?
And also, hacking is actually an umbrella term for various phenomena, and I'm not very good in understanding it, but what they have in common is, like, in a good or a bad way, that it's actually unauthorized.
Yeah.
Unauthorized. So I was wondering if you've ever been, like, or questioning is like, can I do that? Is it allowed? Or like, or you know, like,
yeah.
Was there a moment you're like, can I do that?
Yeah. So speaking of the word hacking, at the time it was pretty early into how, when I started the project in 2006, I conceptualized it 2005. It was still early on. Cultural and societal activist group like what's their name? Oh my God. With the big
Anonymous,
Snowden hadn't happened, so it was more on the underground. But now it's part of the zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how I pronounce it. And at the time, it was very liberating for me to use that term, because it means hacking, literally like cutting and pasting, or it means like computer hacking, and you see the movie Hackers. And that was also pretty cool how they could tap into a network. And I think that metaphor allowed me for my creativity to go further of thinking of these future scenarios, that what we will call in the design world future scenarios. And I think right now I'm sticking to the name, because why not? And it does have a negative connotation. Sometimes when I'm going through immigration and they ask me about what do I do as an artist, I'm like, should I say I do hacking couture? So, I mean, those are the moments that, you know, that makes me question, because those are real. And there are people who are not using it for good causes, although most hackers would say that they're doing it for good causes. But yeah, it's provocative, it's new, and the analogy gave freedom. And it scares some people, because some people are like, you're hacking and you're copying and you're cutting. And so at least it allows for the conversation to start.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for me also to make research, because I never was so interested in that topic, you know. And I started
yes.
with you.
Okay, here's a cut. Because actually we had this conversation live on Instagram. And from time to time, Gianna said hi to people that joined our broadcast. We just said hi to her mom when the sound crashed in.
There's a bell. What is this
bell?
There's
a bell now. That's from the Catholic Church.
There's a Catholic church.
Yeah.
So we're in Queens, New York.
And it's really funny, because it's the sound the church makes around the corner of my parents' house in Germany. It's
oh my
the same
God.
Sound.
So you're from Frankfurt, right?
I'm from Frankfurt, and it's the same sound. And when I heard it first, I was like, what's going on, you know? That's where I come from.
So that's good branding through sound design. You know, the Catholic Church is It's the code.
That's a good branding.
It's a good branding.
Yeah.
Yes.
And also smell, I found out, is a good branding.
Which one?
Because I've been in Boston, as I said, when I was six,
uh-huh.
and I still
Boston.
Have. Uh-huh. It's still when I sometimes walk the streets, like, oh, this I remember from that time. You know, smelling
yeah.
things.
I need to figure out how to do a Hacking Couture perfume then.
Yeah.
Yes. Although
perfume and sound.
we did the electronic Etherealism and the Digital Perfume with Otto von Busch, Despina Papadopoulos, Sara's Couture Symposium a couple years at Pratt, and
wow.
we were thinking about how to prototype. Alison Lewis was also there, people who are in the wearable and fashion innovation world.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Nice. Your mom's still there?
Yeah, she's there.
Oh, that's so cool.
Hola, Ella.
yeah. So, about your method again. What are you looking to understand from a brand?
So specifically from a brand, I'm really trying to get to the essence. Like, what makes Prada so unique? Like, what is the identity? Like, what is Chanel? Or at a cultural level, because I've started to do more work that talks about identity and culture, is like, what is Panamanian culture? Like, what's that that movement, like what makes it so unique, the essence of something, and that's what I'm trying to get with this analysis.
Yeah, and I was wondering, because, or that's nothing I made up, because you have some articles about it on your website.
Mm-hmm.
So that project also helps you to understand something about the ethics or of a brand, like what is the perspective,
mm-hmm. the business model,
humanity, but also on humanity, how are people perceived, like gender,
uh-huh.
race, all that stuff. So maybe that's not so easy to answer, but where does that show in a brand?
Where does that show in the brand? I think the themes, so I developed these diagrams that show what I call the DNA or the code of a brand. And I think it shows in the themes that they choose. So for example, if you look at Gucci during Tom Ford was all about, in a way, S&M and all this LGBTQ topics that were really on the underground of culture. Now it's more about gender fluidity and youth culture, right? So I think that shows some of the values. And in fashion, it's interesting because fashion copies and borrows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what is a trend versus what really are they standing for? But you also have brands, what's it called, universal, is the brand that has no sizes,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think these executions really talk about the value or what they're celebrating. Yeah.
So we are often, like with fashion, in between, or like there is a fine line or not a fine line. There is a topic of cultural appropriation and all the problematics that evolve around that, but also remix culture. Is there something like, if you find out that something is actually, you feel like it's not cool what they are doing, you know, appropriation-wise, do you address that, or how do you deal with that? Because there are special, like Gucci also, and yeah.
Yeah, with the hood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you deal with these topics?
So that's a great point. I would say, I mean, I'm obviously appropriating with this work. It's about remix culture. I don't have a problem with it as long as if somebody makes a mistake. So for all that are joining us, we're talking about when Gucci appropriated a burqa, right? Which in the Muslim world, it could be oppressive for, it is oppressive to women, although some women follow that religion, so they choose to live that way. Other women don't choose to live that way. So it seems that Gucci appropriate that. There's another example, for example, Nike did this whole Puerto Rico line, and they were actually appropriating ethnic native culture from Panama. So the reference was wrong. So I think if you make a mistake when appropriating, which I think it's going to happen no matter what, because, and this is also part of my exercise in mapping the code, so we all know each other, what culture, what design is what, that we can say, I'm sorry, that we call on each other. Diet Prada is doing that, you know, Diet Prada and Instagram is mapping appropriation and who's copying what. But I think saying I'm sorry it's the first step if you were culturally offensive. But also I think to call it out and to say to somebody, I think that you did an error, this is not the right reference. And to do it with respect also, but not to troll on somebody.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, here we have the same reason for the cut. Saying hi to the live TV crowd. Also saying hi to Gianna's sister-in-law, who watched us from Panama.
Hola, Venus. I love you.
But back to topic.
Age-wise, hiking couture reached puberty. This year, you've been to the Fashion Week in Panama City.
Uh-huh.
You were invited.
Yes.
I hope I'm right. And Milan.
Yes.
Did the perception of your project change in these 13 years?
Yeah, because I've changed and I've continued to execute the project with different angles and different areas. So on one end, I think I've learned how to make it more accessible because the language I personally was using was very academic. I got that feedback a couple times and people are like, what is this hacking and deconstruction appropriation? And I think what happened at the Milan Design Week, showing it in the context of a design festival, and also the show was curated by a journalist, Laura Traldi, and she brought in different projects that were addressing collaboration. So to bring it outside of fashion, but in a design place, and also hosting the workshop there, it inspired me to hack Prada and also bring my own values and the things I'm celebrating nowadays in 2019 as a woman, as a Latina here in the United States and as a Panamanian. So it brought a lot more of my personal story, and I wanted to celebrate the contribution of Italian design, specifically of Miuccia Prada, because it's one of the few women designers that has a successful business. And I think this project is also about learning from these stories and using that as an inspiration for doing something that I can contribute as well. And in that process of going to the Milan Design Week, as I was researching the code of Prada, I come across this song, and it was called Ni Gucci Ni Prada, and it's a Panamanian singer, and the song is a reggaeton, urban music. It was just so amazing, and he was talking about how this woman is in love with him, although he has no money, and he cannot give her nor Gucci.
Ni Prada. But go on, Diana.
Music and culture into how people use these fashion brands in a popular way was really important. And when I found out that the artist was from Panama, I was like, wow. So then once I was invited by the curator and producer of Panamanian Fashion Week, I was like, this is a really weird place to have an exhibition because you are in Fashion Week. And in Panama, you have products next to you, you have a clothing line next to you, and then you have the runway. So it's like, it's weird, but I belong there. So I invited Kenny, the singer, to do a performance live and to see how our Panamanian vision of fashion, how he uses in music and in pop culture, those hashtags almost like Prada and Gucci, and how I reinterpret it. So it was the first time I came in a real performance, and I had this character that was half Prada, half Rakataka, and I'm wearing the t-shirt. And a Rakataka it's a person that is from the hood, that it's like low culture, but I love it. And then this character allowed to give a different spin because the people didn't have to consume the project in an academic format. They just saw the performance and saw the pop-up exhibition, and then they, boop, it connected. So it was not about explaining, it's about experiencing. When I do the workshops, people also get it because it's an experiential, but anyways, this is a long-winded way to say how the project has changed and how I've been able to engage more audiences with a low expectation for an academic understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, here we had a classic Wi-Fi problem, but we solved it and we were able to continue our talk.
We were talking about you making long-term projects and also making them available for people who come on your website and be interested or are interested in your approaches or in your methods. So mainly you share your methods. And I was wondering if that is to do with your design way of thinking or something.
Yeah, so I've read a lot of self-help over the years, and I really love, I think this is why I love DIY, because I love to understand how people, you know, because you see this, okay, so you go to a gallery, or you see a final piece, and it's like, how did you do this? Right? So I think breaking down the process and understanding people's processes, either in terms of intellectual matters or design-wise, or how they sew their stuff, helps me understand the world. I didn't choose to work in long format. It's just, it happens because of the nature of the type of projects, and they can be made. It's not that I'm doing a painting. Mm-hmm. Some people are calling it social sculpture. Other people, and it's not that I sat down and I said, I'm gonna do a participatory project. It's just happened that way. And yeah, I think the more I talk to artists, designers that are working with projects that are multimedia or complex, it takes time. So in terms of what you see on my website of why I structured it that way, I don't know, I thought it was like an interesting way to go about it, because sometimes I see people's project and I'm like, what was behind? Like, I wanna learn a little bit more. I don't know if that's for everybody, but I think it's also, it was a creative way of approaching my website, because it's like, oh, why did I do? It makes me think, right, of the why. And sometimes I have to think of the why post facto, because it comes from a creative impulse, and that helps me do that. So it's also a way of streamlining the writing. So it's an exercise for for myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was also interested in how you personally draw the line between your design and your artwork, you know, what's art and what's the design part of Gianna?
Yes, so I think I'm very attuned with the design language, so as an aesthetic I like it, also like it as a process, but also I'm complete chaos when it comes to creativity, and sometimes I just need to write the wave, and I just need to do things in ways that are not organized. It's interesting because in commercial settings, they're not used to that. And sometimes you need to break down traditional ways of doing things so people get creative. So with the last commercial client that I was working with, we have meditation in the morning and we did movement and we questioned, and it was like, it really got people off base, but there's nothing worse for creativity that is getting stuck in a routine. I think routine is helpful, but when you're getting stuck, so I think that's how I don't know if I managed to mediate it successfully, because sometimes I'm like, just go away, let's just sit down and do it the same way. But other times, following or understanding certain methodologies and approaches is very helpful, and it's a guiding principle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you. I have two more questions. They are more general. This one question is maybe a question that has been asked over and over again, artists. But I feel like if you're sitting in front of someone, that's something I always want to know. So where do you get inspired, or when?
So I get inspired, I would say, commonly in three places. When I'm taking a shower, when I'm meditating, although I'm trying to get them thoughts out, and when I'm dancing.
Or and how does it function for you? You have to write it down then, or how do you keep it, or is it just a feeling?
So sometimes it comes just like as a nudge. It's like, do this. And I was like, oh my God, you're being really clear, whatever intelligence is out there. Or, and I write it down. Other times I ignore it. That's when I get in trouble. When I start asking other people, it's like, what do they think? Also, another way is when you share something with somebody and then they say something, it sparks an idea. But yeah, that's how I keep track. I have to write it down, and they say that you have to write down everything.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last question for now is, like, what are you looking forward to do next?
I think to do next is to... You mean in what aspect?
Practical,
tactically, or conceptually, or...
Or something you want to bring into life in your shows.
So... There are two things I want to bring to life, which is to be more playful with hacking couture and with all my projects, to really enjoy myself. I would love to bring to life this hybrid that is commercial, that is self-sustainable, and that can also be interesting and aware and inspiring, and that can do things differently. So it's specifically with hacking couture and do more collaborations. And also the water project and mirror dancing that I've been working on for a couple years now. And mirror dancing is it's something that is so liberating in to work in, maybe in sculpture format, but serving the purpose, which is to dance. In terms of water, is bringing more awareness to the importance of water, that I personally need to be reminded myself of all the great things that we have in life, and also from a cultural perspective of what's our relationship with water. That's my Christmas list of wishes. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Jana.
Thank you, darling. Yes. Yes. Yes.